When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle. You are the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram, with me per usual, my producer, Marcus.
What's up, Dub Nation?
And our master of all things sound, Maxime.
How's it going?
Boys, I'm fired up to announce, rejoining us, the Bay Area News Group's Warriors Specialist, the host of the Locked On Warriors NBA podcast, and a man who is not afraid to shout out the Marriott Hotel Group or accuse a good friend of growing random vegetables, Mr. Wes Goldberg. What's going on, Wes?
Thanks for having me. Always a good time to be on here.
Great. Thanks for coming. Let the record reflect. So we always bring people in kind of early. We're doing this over a Zoom meeting. It is what it is. And we kind of talk about the topics. And at one point, Wes asked if we could pause for a minute so that he could go to the bathroom. And obviously, we allowed that to happen. But I have reason to believe that Wes, in fact, did not go to the bathroom and did that just so he could eavesdrop on our conversation and shit house us. Wes, any truth to that or what?
Yep. You called my bluff. That's exactly what I did. That's kind of my move in all of these Zoom happy hour calls now. I just say, hey, friends, I'm going to go to the bathroom. Just talk amongst yourselves about anything that you'd like to talk about. Don't, like, as if I weren't even here. And then I walk, and then I pretend to walk away. And then I just stand behind my computer while I listen to them talk.
That's amazing. Do you try to bait them with like really obvious takes? Like, obviously, I'm not standing here listening. So feel free to talk about me as much as you can.
It's like, hey, remember that time where I just ignored all of you guys for a week? Talk amongst yourselves about how you felt about that. What did you guys think about my ex-girlfriend? I'll walk away now.
We are on to you here, Wes. Don't you try to pull those shady moves with us. And boys, we got a ton of stuff to talk about today. In fact, we're debuting two brand new segments. So I tell you what, let's jump in. And here's the first. So right now, everybody is watching The Last Dance, the documentary ESPN came out early with about Jordan. In fact, I think it's about as close to live sports as we're going to see for months. And the reason I say that, I mean, it's not live, it's a documentary, but it's a shared experience. It's something that sports fans can watch together and discuss together. And we don't have a whole lot of that. You know, we had the NFL draft, but to put it bluntly, I don't give a fuck about the NFL anymore now that the Raiders have left. So this is, you know, the one thing I have to look forward to on the sporting landscape. So in this segment, which we're going to call Enjoying the Last Dance, because I'm not very creative and can come up with a better title, what we're going to do is look back through each episode of the documentary and try to enjoy it through the lens of specific questions. We're a little bit late. There's already been four episodes, so this one might be a little bit longer than normal, but we're going to try to do this every single week. And here is the first question, the first lens I want to look at the documentary through. I'm going to call it Debating the Throne, and the concept is easy. Recently, like really specific recently, the debate over who is the greatest basketball player of all time has really come into focus. LeBron's success has forced ESPN to start talking about him possibly as the GOAT, and suddenly now the question of whether or not Jordan is the greatest player ever is an open debate. There's a bunch of LeBron fans out there. There's a bunch of Jordan fans out there. And in fact, the fact that it is an open debate is why I think The Last Dance was just released. You know, Jordan is one of the only players in history who owns his own image. In fact, that's why he wasn't in NBA video games for a long period of time. If you think back on like NBA jams or some of the early games, you never saw Jordan because he got to control that. So it was up to him to allow them to do this documentary. And the reason I think he allowed them to do it now is because people are finally questioning whether or not he's the greatest. And he felt the need to give out all of this footage, all of these stories now, because the younger NBA fan out there doesn't have a living memory of Jordan. So for here, what we're going to do is debate it out. What you guys think as far as who the GOAT is. And what I love about it is that there's a difference in all of our ages. Marcus and I would imagine, we'll find out, are more from the Jordan era. You know, we grew up at a time when Jordan was a superhero, not just a superstar. And Maxime and Wes might be more from the LeBron side. But let's see. So here's my first question, boys. Before the documentary, going into this, who did you guys think was the best player? Wes, why don't we throw it to you first?
First of all, for a segment title, Watch the Throne was sitting right there. Is far instead of debating the throne, but
good one.
All right, just saying.
Marcus, pick a team, you bastard. I mean, Wes is in the house, dude, and I don't remember anybody sending me any texts with any.
I should have. That was my fault.
Titles. Okay, yeah, thanks.
I got drunk on Sunday and forgot to text you. I was in the LeBron camp. Here's the thing about like I turned 29 2 weeks ago, so when this stuff was being filmed, I was what, 8, 7 years old, something like that. I remember Michael Jordan just being like a celebrity. Like he was just like, it was him, Bill Clinton, and Ronald McDonald. And that's like the people I knew when I was like 7. So, I understood he was awesome and larger than life, but like to watch then, like I appreciated LeBron in a way that I never appreciated Michael Jordan. So when you start this thing by saying this is live sports, but not really, for me, it is kind of like live sports. Now, mm-hmm. I went back and like watched stuff, but never like with the, like, it's all with like knowing the ending and how it'll like, you know, you watch the YouTube video, like Michael Jordan hits game winning shot against Utah. It's like, okay, well, I know where this is going. But this is sort of like a more serialized version of it. So it kind of is like live sports for me, but, I'm appreciating Michael Jordan in a way through watching this where I'm starting to question it. Cause I had this thought the other day. I know the LeBron James has all these great statistical arguments. He's 8 straight finals, like, you know, all these things. But if you just flip the timelines and if you take LeBron James and you put him in the mid 80s to late 90s and he does all the things that he even did right now. And then you take Michael Jordan and you put him now and you say, okay, that's like LeBron James is the greatest player of all time. And then Michael Jordan comes along and goes 6-0 in the NBA Finals and takes all the accomplishments and all the things that he did. I think we would just be like, oh, this is done. Michael Jordan is the greatest ever.
Sure. Before we get into what the documentary has taught you, I just want to make sure I'm hearing you right. So when it first started, now that you're getting a chance to see him, right before that, were you leaning in the LeBron camp? I mean, who did you have a presumption was the greatest player of all time before watching?
LeBron, and I'm still leaning LeBron, but I just try to like have those thought exercises, which is why I said that. But I'm still leaning LeBron, but I was definitely heavy LeBron going into this, heavy LeBron.
I'll make mine fast, and I'll put it this way, Wes, you are crazy wrong, maybe even a little bit stupid. Of course it's Jordan. It was certainly Jordan before. Why it's Jordan now, I'll save until we hear from Marcus and Maxime. MT, back me up.
It's definitely Jordan. I mean, I think my age probably gives me that bias that you were talking about. We grew up on Jordan. So, being able to see both of these players, gives us an unfair advantage. But I just think the impact on the game that Jordan had, just kind of pushes it over the top. Statistically, yes, LeBron, you know, probably beats Michael in a bunch of categories like rebounds and assists and minutes played. And then you get to finals and, you know, Michael Jordan wins. He was 6-for-6 in the finals and, you know, has something like 9-10 scoring titles. But I think when you look at how the NBA was doing as a business before Michael Jordan got in there, and there's that part in The Last Dance where they showed how the indoor soccer team was, you know, like a bigger draw than the Chicago Bulls were before Michael Jordan got there. I think the fact that Michael Jordan and in partnership with, you know, Magic and Larry Bird and some other players helped really save the NBA and turn it into what it is today just shows the impact. It's like Steph Curry permanently changed the game for jump shooters and people his size. At that time, Michael Jordan permanently changed the game, but he permanently saved the game of basketball. And then he goes in there and, you know, like I think what's lost in that, some of those highlights, like that game 2 against the Celtics when they lost the series 4-1, that was, you know, like he was coming off a year when he broke his foot, didn't play, it was the second year in the league, and he goes into the Garden and scores 63. you know, against a team that had five Hall of Famers in it. So I think Jordan was just a more profound player, and LeBron's probably a better all-around player. But when it gets down to who's just the greatest to ever pick up the basketball, I think Jordan wins. It's not a slam dunk as it was, because LeBron is closing the gap, but I don't think he can ever close it fully.
Before the doc, Maxime, where were you leaning?
So before the doc, I was leaning Mike, and I will say that in some ways, I'm still for sure heavily in camp Jordan as GOAT, but maybe the doc has actually tipped the scales a little bit more in LeBron's favor, just because it's humanized him. For me, there was never a question, because Jordan has always been painted as a figure that is impossible to beat. And as a fan of the Warriors, who's almost like vicariously living through Steph and Klay and these people that I'm watching as my team every night, we beat LeBron, which means that, like, to me, he's just instantly beatable. He's human. Whereas Mike Jordan was this larger-than-life figure that that existed in this god-level tier. And so getting the curtain peeled back a little bit has kind of helped me understand that he wasn't like a perfect basketball player. In fact, it took him a few years to even get to the finals, much less win a title. But I will say, to augment MT's point, he didn't just make the NBA a bigger business. I mean, he made so many businesses a bigger business. And if you just look at the representation that he took Nike, the level that he took Nike to, there's sort of no question. I think you can just talk about the number of people around the world that don't know who Michael Jordan is versus the number of people around the world who don't know who LeBron James is. And I think that would settle the argument right there.
That makes sense. And what I want to do is make this specific, specific to Wes, because I want him to change his mind somehow during the course of this segment. But before I get specific, let me also give you an admission. My view on LeBron is completely jaded and unfair. You know, I watch basketball the way I watch movies. It's just entertainment. And I root for the Warriors obsessively, right? So what that means is, by the time they're playing in the finals, the best player on the opposing team is the villain of my movie. You know, just practical reality, man. And that's been true as a host of this podcast. So I recognize who the hell LeBron is. But every time I've watched him with the hate of an opposing fan, as opposed to the intelligence of someone who's watched basketball his entire life. And so hopefully, you know, maybe Wes can talk us out of this, but let's weaponize this, all right? So here are the things I've pulled out of the documentary, reasons I think Jordan are better. And all of you, tell me when I am wrong. Wes, you included. Here's number one. Jordan, this is the stuff of legend. You know, it's what you hear about Jordan, even without watching any of his highlights, the things we knew before they came out with this. And it's the concept that he would prefer die than lose. He had the most psychopathic competitive mentality that anyone has ever brought to any arena, let alone the sporting arena. And we've seen some examples of that, right? We saw when he went to the McDonald's championship in France, something that just means nothing at all. They've already won five titles. He has every reason to take that game off. Scottie is taking the entire preseason and most of the beginning of the season off. Rodman didn't even show up. And instead of viewing that as an opportunity to load manage, Jordan went out there and destroyed it, because every game means something. And that wasn't the only one from that. After they win that game, we see one of his teammates jokingly celebrate with Ron Harper having won a quote-unquote championship. And they turn to Jordan and ask him, you know, for a hug. Hey, I won my first championship. Jordan looked like he wanted to punch that dude in the nuts. It's like, do not play with the concept of winning, especially when it comes to words like championships. We saw a story from Doug Collins that Jordan left a practice because he thought Collins was cheating on the score. By the way, Collins didn't say he wasn't. You know, it's possible that he was. We see that when they start off during that last season, they're like 3 or 4 games above 500. It's their first like 10 games. It means nothing. And Jordan gives this amazing quote saying, if you have already mentally dominated a team, you cannot let them get off the mat. That kind of psychosis, That's what I need from my greatest of all time. If we're talking about skill sets, chances are you're not going to find objective reasons why LeBron doesn't have the skills that Jordan does. You know, what am I going to tell you, man? LeBron is a freak of nature. He's unbelievably skilled. So I've got to go to things like mentality. And I think it's a slam f-ing dunk that Jordan has a better mentality for winning than LeBron ever did. Am I wrong?
I have so many thoughts on this. my first question to you is, what are your thoughts on Russell Westbrook?
Why? What do you mean? Because he has that same mentality?
Yeah.
I think that, so great question. I don't know enough about Westbrook's mentality. I haven't watched documentaries on his, but I can tell you what he's missing. He wasn't able to weaponize it because he doesn't have a single championship. He doesn't have anywhere near the success that Jordan was able to obtain. And so, you know, if what you need me to do is take it a step further, it wasn't just that he was a psychopath, is that he took his psychosis and turned it into success.
But LeBron did too. LeBron took whatever personality flavor he is and turned it into success. So I don't care about any of that stuff. And I know that like that's like the whole myth making thing with MJ is that he was just like this like win at all costs, like emotionless super robot thing. I don't care. He just seems like a jerk to me. Like I'm like, all right, cool. Like sweet. Like LeBron seems like a really nice guy and he has arguably as many accomplishments as Michael Jordan does.
Okay, but
I take that one. I like that guy better. He's nice and winning.
Two players. Wes, if two players were playing 21 and the you had to bet on one of them.
LeBron.
For the outcome of your life. Hold LeBron. On. I'm not saying these two people. I'm just saying mentality.
Oh, okay.
Two players of equal skill sets. One would prefer die than lose. The other is a nice guy, you know, and okay. is enjoying his life.
So
who would you bet on?
That's where I'll stop you. I don't know that LeBron is, I would rather, I don't know that he's not, I would rather die than lose. I just think it manifests itself in a very different way. And I'll say this, as a proud introvert, I don't conduct myself in the same way Michael Jordan does. But it does not mean that I don't go as hard as some of my other extroverted, you know, people at our goals. I just go about it in a different way. And we see how hard LeBron James works. I mean, the what you hear, like the legend stuff that we are going to talk about with LeBron is just the extent and the stretches he went to take care of his body. We know about all the money that this guy is unbelievable. Go on his Instagram any day during this quarantine and you can just like see him working out like an insane amount. And in this documentary, Michael Jordan didn't like actually start weight training until like year six. And so it's like, all right, cool. Because you just like got kicked on your ass like a bunch of times. Now you're going to start lifting weights. Like LeBron has already been ahead of it where he's like that was a part of his routine from day one. And so I think it just his I am never going to lose that way again. And granted, he did. He's not 6-0 in the finals, but like he also went against better teams. So I just think that an unfairly stacked teams, sorry, but it was I do think that it came out in a different way and it was a little bit more. It was a little bit less jerky and trash talky and a lot more, let me just get into my chamber here and just like hone my craft degree that nobody's ever done it before.
If by chamber you mean phone booth, that fool gets hit in the balls and he calls Kiki Vanderway for help from the league. Jordan gets pushed down by Detroit and puts on muscle so that he doesn't need anyone's help but his own. Marcus, Maxime, which one of us are right?
I mean, I still lean towards Jordan, obviously. I think the gap has been closed. And I think, Wes, to your point, you know, like LeBron came in at a different point in a different era. So, of course, his body is going to be ready for the rigors of an NBA schedule more now. But that's because everybody's body is. Like, look at how Reggie Miller was so thin. If you put Reggie Miller out there today, he would get bumped around a lot more and probably wouldn't be as effective and he would have to hit the weight room. So I think the overall competitiveness is obviously, I think, tips to Jordan. Not to take anything away from LeBron. He definitely has to have that streak in him to be as successful as he has been. I just think that the ultimate differentiator between the two is just, to your point, the size. And I think that's where it works against LeBron James. Like when we talk about GOAT status, we don't mention Kobe. We don't mention Kevin Durant. We don't mention Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, it could be argued Shaquille O'Neal was the most dominant force, you know, when he was at his prime. I mean, it was literally impossible to stop him. So why wouldn't he be the GOAT? I think part of it is because it was just unfair. He was a 7-foot-1 dude who was close to 300 pounds and had the footwork, you know, of like a Messi. So, you know, when you add all those together, it's different. When LeBron James is coming at you and he's 6'9 and 265 pounds of just cut muscle with 2% body fat, it's different when you come into the league like Jordan did. He wasn't as big. They were telling him you can't carry a team if you're not a center in this league. And Michael Jordan just did it. He did it anyway. So I think the mental advantage that Michael Jordan has over LeBron can't be discounted. I just think the sheer will and the talent involved needed to take his frame and his size over those teams. I mean, yes, LeBron played some stacked teams, but he didn't, you know, the Warriors' first team wasn't stacked. They were just a better team. Sure. You know, like
without Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, but that's fine.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, but you know, injuries happen. So, I mean, you know, if you put LeBron and that team against Magic Johnson and the Lakers or Larry Bird and Parrish and McHale and the Celtics, I don't know if they win.
Or maybe. How about if somebody implemented the LeBron rules? We just had an entire episode about how Jordan got the shit beat out of him.
They did.
I mean, The Spurs
implemented the LeBron rules, and they cut him off at mid-range. And
that's, but you can't say the physicality that Jordan faced and overcame is anything near.
Oh my God!
What LeBron has had to overcome.
LeBron would have been even better in Michael Jordan's day. You want to give LeBron James at like 6'10", 260 pounds, and running a 4.4 40? You want to let him start hitting people? Yeah, bring it on.
The other way around. Would he have been, if not his ability to dominate other people, we can see that. It would be the rest of the league's ability to knock him down. And would he have the mentality, would he have the mental strength to get back up?
They because wouldn't knock him down.
Well, I mean,
it's huge.
There are certainly people.
LeBron flops a lot.
I mean, that's different than getting knocked down. He knocks himself down
and then he turns up and winks to the camera.
The point
and
is
like, oh, I got you.
I am less concerned about LeBron running into Bill Laimbeer as I am 1988 Michael Jordan running into
Fair enough.
Bill
Laimbeer. Well, no, but pick somebody else. Pick Marcin Gortat. It doesn't, I mean, there are people within the league today who would certainly be capable of physically dominating LeBron. It's just a matter of what would he do in response to
the same thing that Michael Jordan did.
That's what we don't know. I mean, and I'll give you credit.
We do know it. That's what I'm saying. The Spurs did the closest version of it where they said, okay, we're going to wall off the paint now so you can't get to the rim. That was basically what the Jordan rules were supposed to do, is you don't get to get to the rim, Michael Jordan. So what he did was he learned how to pass the ball, which is something LeBron never had to learn because he knew how to pass the ball already. And LeBron, in response to that, learned to improve his mid-range game and his outside jump shot. That was the counter.
There's a distinction between what you and I are saying. I'm not saying that the only person on the face of the earth who's ever faced specific defensive approaches is Michael Jordan. Of course not. And of course, scouts and GMs and teams and coaches have created specific plans for LeBron, including Popovich. What I'm saying is that no one's ever been allowed to use the physicality of the 80s and early 90s against LeBron the way they did against Jordan. We know for certain that Jordan had the mental fortitude to get back up. I'm not saying we know for certain that LeBron didn't. I'm just saying that we've never seen it, which brings me back to, I think, an amazing point you made and one I want an opinion on from Maxime. When Wes says, Maxime, that LeBron internally could be, might be, is as mentally dominant as Jordan is, but we just, you know, haven't heard about it or at least haven't been able to see it. Does that speak to you? Do you think that's a possibility?
That LeBron is as mentally tough as Jordan?
Uh-huh, exactly.
No, I think it's precisely the reason that Michael Jordan is the greatest and LeBron isn't. Like,
oh, my God.
I think we've seen enough out of LeBron in the finals against the Warriors to indicate that he doesn't have the mental toughness to withstand the barrage of different ways of attacking him.
You know what's so much better? As the one like media flack here, as like the one guy who like participates in the fake news cycle, okay? I'm going to just attack other media members here. It is so much easier to write about Michael Jordan ripping a teammate and his ruthless desire to win than it is LeBron James taking 20 minutes before he goes to bed at 10:30 every night to meditate with his Calm app. It is so much like the mental fortitude. And let's not forget, Michael Jordan walked away from the game in the middle of his prime because he couldn't handle it anymore. Whoa, we always gloss over
that.
That's
not objective fact. Nobody knows whether or not, you know, why he left. There's a ton of rumors that suggest that the league politely asked him to leave because of gambling problems. I am not going to just blindly accept that.
Either way, he walked away.
I mean, wasn't there...
He had a break. He was ripping Dennis Rodman for wanting a 48-hour vacation in the last episode. Bro, you took like a year and a half vacation.
Didn't he, in the middle of it. Didn't he start to cry during the first year of the Heatles? Because suddenly he was a villain. He didn't like this new conception of him.
We had all these stories early on that he had.
I feel like I heard it from LeBron. But here, let's take Marcus's point and let me ask you this. So I think it is an objective truth that Jordan's game is more beautiful to watch. I think that looking at his highlights now, is like watching a highly trained acrobat. You know, what he is capable of doing with his body is art in motion. LeBron's stats, while incredibly impressive, are more physically based. It's like what I could do to a first grader in a game of 21, just because I'm bigger and stronger. Am I off on that?
Is this to me now?
Yeah.
Jenny. Yeah, because I made point, so I agree with it 100%.
No, you're off. I mean like what are we like? We're just like giving him like, oh, you're like really big, so like you automatically like don't, it doesn't count. Like, you know who else is big? Jeff Green.
No, wait a minute. That's what we're saying. What we're saying is compare their highlights. If I'm comparing LeBron's highlights to Jeff Green's highlights, like, yeah, of course it's better.
Jeff Green though, he had some moments.
Yeah, shout out Jeff Green. I mean,
shout out Jeff Green. No, here's the thing.
I mean, look at it. I mean, think it like, look. So LeBron's probably one of his most, his signature dunks was dunking on Jason Terry, right?
That's great.
Yeah.
One of my favorite moments of my life.
Michael Jordan's is dunking on Patrick Ewing. I mean, one guy is 7'1" and one guy is 6'3".
Oh, come on. LeBron's dunked on like 7'1". Okay. But anecdotal.
Does LeBron have anything like the switch in the air? The left hand to the right hand or the right hand to the left hand, right?
From a skill level, I would say that LeBron surpasses, if we're talking about beauty of the game, just watching it from an aesthetic standpoint, to me, what stands out when I watch LeBron from just a beauty of the game standpoint, no, he does not have the at the rim switching for no good reason from one hand to the other just because he could, right?
Don't say but. God damn it. Right when I thought that we could be on the same team, all right, go ahead.
When LeBron is passing the ball, I have not seen anybody do it like he does. And that is all skill. Like his ability to hit shooters right in the chest, right at the number, right where they need it. Or like Kyle Korver was talking about this in an article that I read, I don't know, years ago, but like how he just like, he hits him right at like the hip level where he wants it. So he doesn't have to do, like for a rhythm shooter, doesn't have to bring it down and up. It's already down. It just saves like half a second and makes all the difference in the world. It's like, that is the stuff that's just unbelievable. And it's just this court vision and just this timing. Like, that's all what we're talking about. When you're talking about vision, timing, and precision, that's what we're talking about when we talk about skill. So no, he doesn't just like switch it with his tongue out because he can. He actually makes a beautiful pass in a way that we've never actually seen that before. That he is downloading the game at a speed that we've never seen before and then is able to execute it in a way, skill-wise and physicality-wise, we have never seen before.
Well, I think we've seen somebody give a pass into the numbers and hit somebody in their numbers,
but not with
before.
The consistency.
Right.
Which,
look, no, Magic Johnson, what are you talking about? Magic Johnson was a much better passer.
He's a great passer. I think so. Who's the better defensive player, Wes?
If we're going to say that like Michael, like all like LeBron James's good things were like, okay, Magic, like all, like you could watch Kobe Bryant and be like, well, he also has a nice turnaround fadeaway. Like, that's not what we're talking about. We're comparing Michael to LeBron. And you asked me whether from a skill standpoint, LeBron has this. And LeBron does
Michael
have a skill.
And LeBron, who's the better defensive player if you had to pick one?
Give me one defensive possession at their peak, LeBron.
No, not one defensive. Who's the better defensive player?
Fine, LeBron.
Okay. I just feel
If we're going to talk about highlights, LeBron's maybe greatest highlight ever is a defensive play. I don't remember a single defensive play Michael Jordan did.
But we don't even need to be anecdotal. Like, this isn't about
that's what I'm saying. I don't want to
we have opinions. Like, who has won a defensive player of the year award?
LeBron got robbed. Let's keep this organized. Let's stick with the paradigm that Wes just gave us. I don't remember the three bullet points that you established to set up what skill means, but you're limiting within your analysis those three bullet points to passing alone. If we use those three, I mean, what was it? It was skill. What were the three things you told us?
No, it was really eloquent when I said it. Now I don't remember it. But
whatever the hell the three bullet points were, if we stretch it out through the entire
skill,
spectrum.
It was precision, timing, and
Timing, and whatever the the third one was. If we take that through the entire spectrum of the sport, not just passing, I would argue that that skill argument would land further on Jordan's side than it would on LeBron.
That's fair.
You were able to pinpoint a single skill within the sport of basketball in which he succeeds does not mean he is necessarily better. But let me tell you this. I love the passion you're bringing. I f***ing love this. I thought this might be a boring segment. Instead, I feel like we're drinking beers and arguing. So this is exactly what I wanted.
Are we not drinking beers and arguing?
It's not beers. I've been drinking for a long time. Let me give you this one.
So Michael Jordan's tequila, is that why you're literally just drinking the Kool-Aid?
Very obviously. Here's another one. Jordan didn't let concerns over his legacy impact his pursuit of success or greatness. How many times has LeBron joined the dunk contest? I wasn't able to find it. How many times would LeBron have been willing to change his coach from someone like Doug Collins, who was featuring him number one above everything else, and then run with Phil Jackson, whose principal thing to Jordan was, hey, pass. You are not winning the scoring crown anymore. You are not going to necessarily be the face of everything because we want you to win. And what did he do? I'm on board. LeBron, on the other side of that, is hand-grooming coaches so that he can stab them in the back in case things do not work out in his favor. You know, objective fact.
What is the most overrated thing that you hear in, like, the scouting process for a draft? And I'm not diverting the conversation. I'm about to make a point here. But, like, what's, like, the most overrated thing that you can hear about from, like, an NBA draft prospect? You're like, they say a thing, and you're like, forget it.
You're diverting the conversation.
I'm not. What is it? What's the answer to that question?
I don't know. What is it?
Like, some BS thing about, like, confidence, right? It's like, oh, he's confident. He's like, cool. Should he be the number one overall pick because he's confident? No. So I just, like, all these things that we keep talking about are just, like, personality traits. It's like, who cares? Who's better at playing basketball? LeBron James is.
That's not what we're saying. That's not that person. The one I just gave you was not a personality trait.
It is. Is he willing to fire a coach? Is he, like, worried about his legacy?
It's sacrifice.
Like,
it's sacrifice. That's a different thing.
Okay, fine. LeBron sacrificed then. He's averaged 27-7 for his entire career, where there was a period. He was literally, for 2013, shooting 60% from the field. I mean, he was the most efficient basketball player we've ever seen, a skill position player that we had ever seen, okay? LeBron James and coaches have come out, and, like, Eric Spoelstra has come out and said this. He actually said it on Heat Huddle the other day, where he said LeBron James could have averaged easily 40 points per game if he wanted to, but he didn't, because that whole thing in this documentary about we finally had to give LeBron – or we had to give Michael Jordan a shape, like – a diagram of a shape to figure out that he could pass the ball for him to hit that next level. LeBron never needed a shape to understand that passing the ball was a good idea. Oh. He was always sacrificing for his teammates. Always. That's like the whole narrative with LeBron James. He's the most unselfish player.
You're being completely ridiculous now. I mean, completely ridiculous. There's no way that you can tell me he selected his current coaches in LA because he wanted to make sure that his teammates would ensure a championship.
He doesn't need the coach to do it. He doesn't.
He doesn't recognize that. I think I agree with you that LeBron has made sacrifices, but the idea that he's made sacrifices more so than Jordan has to reach success, I think, is off. But MT, Maxine, where you guys at?
Can I flip that argument?
Please.
Sorry. All right. I agree with you. That is a good point. LeBron James does not value coaching in the way that he should. He should have stayed with Eric Spoelstra his entire career. His best coach he ever had wasn't close.
That's not my point. That's not my point. Okay, fair enough.
But Michael Jordan, all right, you know what? Forget it. Michael Jordan wouldn't play for another coach other than Phil Jackson after that, right? That's why he was retiring, right? How does that factor into what we were talking about here?
I think what it shows is that he was willing to pursue championships above anything and everything else. what Jordan had identified was the best way to weaponize his talents to bring titles home to Chicago. That involved Phil Jackson. And when Krause wanted to explode something that he knew to be title successful, he bucked the system.
That was my question. I have no follow up.
Here, let me throw this one out here. And this is maybe more of a shot at another superstar than it is LeBron James, but it has to be said. So we got an indication last night that Jordan listened to and read all of his critics, something that has been coming into the news recently, right? We get that series against Cleveland, and before he hits the game-winning shot against Craig Eaglo, he apparently corners three beat writers, all of which had chose Cleveland. He tells the first two who had picked Cleveland to win before game seven, "We've taken care of you and we've taken care of you." And he tells the last dude who picked him to win in seven, "We take care of you tonight." And then when he hits the game-winning shot, as the documentary explained to us, he screams out, "Go home, motherfuckers, go home," talking about the beat writers. So what that suggests to me is this dude was out there reading things, right? And he was listening to things. Maybe he even listened, if podcasts exist back then, he would have listened to podcasts. But the principal difference is that when he was listening and reading these things, it was so that he could tell their authors, "F you," not so that he could ask them, "Why are you writing about me?" He took his insecurity and weaponized it. He decided that I'm going to read these guys and prove them wrong. I loved that. I liked that reveal last night.
That was my favorite, among my favorite anecdotes from that whole thing. I loved that. Because as a beat reporter, if I was doing that, and let's say I pick up against the Warriors and like Draymond Green comes up to me and just like, "You," I'd be like, "Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great story. Like, now I have that forever." I agree. That is cool, because you hear like a lot of athletes now will just be like, "Oh, I don't read anything." It's like, poor shit. And then even if they do, they end up being like Kevin Durant and just like whining about it.
Wes, I love your takes. And I love the passion we've brought, but one of the interesting downsides of an argument segment is that we are both pushing each other and I don't really get to bask in some of the knowledge you're bringing. This is a real question. This isn't an F to you. I want to hear your take on it. Why has LeBron not been willing to try a dunk contest? And does that matter to you at all? You know, I mean, like what's going on there?
No, it does matter to me. I think that the problem was, in similar to what you were explaining with Michael and Jerry Krause, where he's like, "You know what? There's systematically, there's something wrong here. I'm not going to take part of it anymore." And he bucks the system, to use your words. It kind of feels like LeBron did the same thing to the slam dunk contest.
Yeah.
This thing is a complete sham of what it used to be. It's a complete charade. The production value, it's all like just a stage production, and there's really no value to it. And if I'm going to, And LeBron for years was the best in-game dunker in the league, and we all just like, that was it. And I think he was happy enough with that, and it wasn't that he was running away from legacy, but he wasn't chasing it. And there was a period too, similar to this whole train of thought, where in Miami, one of his number one goals when he got to the Heat was to win Defensive Player of the Year. And I would say he could have done that in 2012, but he sacrificed that because he wasn't going to do that. He was, and look, maybe you could say, well, instead he did load management. Well, yeah, he did. He learned to manage, like he didn't take games off, but he learned to manage his minutes and his body and his energy output and all these things, because at the end of the day, all he wanted to do is win a championship. And I think that it falls within the same category. And that's what's ultimately why this makes this such a good argument, right? Yep. Because you know who just tried to be Michael Jordan every single way was Kobe Bryant.
Yep.
And we never talk about Kobe in the same, like most of us, in the same way. Because in order to be better than Michael Jordan, you had to be different.
Yep.
But you see so many of the same spices and elements in the way they went about things, but they just went about it in such a different way. And it kind of goes back to what I'm saying. LeBron is nice guy goat. Michael Jordan is salty goat. And they're both like in this argument for that reason, but they just sort of went about it in a different way, in different eras, in different contexts. But I think there's a lot of the same stuff there.
I think one of the reasons too, it's not the full reason, but it contributed, is because of literally how LeBron James dunks. He jumps off of 1 foot, and in a dunk contest, it's aesthetically more pleasing when you have dunkers that jump off of 2 feet and can do things. That's why you saw Aaron Gordon, doing well, because he would jump off 2 feet, jump over somebody, and it's just a different type of dunk. So I think the type of dunks that LeBron does in game are so powerful, but they're usually the same one. It's because it's on a breakaway, or he's, charging down the lane and nobody would dare step in front of that. Whereas in a dunk contest, it's more creativity and how can you do something that's not just sheer power, and that doesn't play into the strengths of LeBron as a dunker.
Let me give you guys this softball. So another way that these guys have differed is how they got their teammates paid. One of the ongoing subplots, at least in episodes 1 and 2, is how Pip got right. He's got a 7-year contract for $18 million. And, that's Pippen's business. And it was the deal that he reached with the team. And, Jordan didn't get involved. That's fine. But the other side of that spectrum is you look at contracts like Tristan Thompson. When LeBron was involved, his boys got paid. Does that matter? Does that fit into this analysis, or does it only matter what they do on the floor for their own exploits?
I think he gets people paid because he steps in this situation of a Tristan Thompson or whatever reason, Kentavious Caldwell Pope. But he also gets guys paid like Kyle Korver, other shooters that he's played with, even to like a lesser extent, but like even Mike Miller making like $13, $14 million right, or whatever it was for Miami before. Like they knew they needed a 3-point specialist. He wasn't worth that money. They had to amnesty him later because he was too injured. But I think that both of them legitimately ended up making their teammates better. I think that LeBron was, for whatever reason, I think a lot of Michael Jordan stans say LeBron doesn't make his teammates better. I think the ways in which he makes his teammates better is so much more obvious, where Michael Jordan's competitive streak is so much more out there and obvious, where the way LeBron makes his teammates better is so much more out there and obvious, where Michael Jordan, I think a key moment in the documentary that I came away with was how he was talking to Dennis Rodman when Pippen had to walk away. And he's like, hey, man, I need you to be my number two. And Rodman played some of the best basketball of his career, even like not the twilight of his career, but toward like way past his like dominant Detroit Pistons days, and I thought that was like a really profound moment in the documentary. And then even talking about Pippen, like he's stronger when somebody's standing next to him, knowing like to have that sort of emotional intelligence to recognize that in your teammate and make your teammate stronger in that way was like almost Tim Duncan-esque. And so as far as getting your teammates paid, I think it matters. I wouldn't start counting the dollar figures, right? But I would say that in what that represents to me is making your teammates better. And I think both of them did make their teammates better in extreme and major ways.
Yeah, that Rodman story really stuck out to me too. There was a couple of things about the Rodman thing. And it was how Jordan recognized that different people need different things and allowed them to get away with it. I don't remember what they were disagreeing about, but there was a story that Rodman came and apologized to Jordan without apologizing. He stopped by and said, hey.
Yeah, he got kicked out of a game.
There you go. That's exactly right. And he says, hey, do you have an extra cigar? And then they go back to Jordan and he says, look, I knew he was apologizing. I didn't need the words out of his mouth. And then further on, we see this concept, and Wes, you brought it up. Rodman brings up the idea that he needs extra time, and Jordan says, you, I'm the one who needs extra time. But he ultimately not only allowed it, but when Rodman disappeared for God knows how many hours, supposedly, I guess, all this one seems kind of unbelievable to me, it was Jordan who went to Vegas, pulled his ass out of the hotel room, and at least as far as the documentary is concerned, there didn't seem like there was any lasting animosity. Like the only thing we saw that he was kind of pissy about was that Jordan didn't want to go through conditioning drills again, and it turned out it wasn't necessary. Rodman was already back up on his feet. But let me give you another softball, another reason why at least LeBron should be considered. And I don't know why the hell I'm doing this. It's a kind of hell shoot. But I've heard Jordan referred to as the blueprint, and this kind of fits within what Marcus was talking about. He came in and redefined what it meant to be, well, he continued what it meant to be a superstar with Bird and Magic, but then redefined it, continued to push it forward with shoe contracts and commercials and those kind of things. LeBron took that and expanded it even further, with the opening of schools, with things like Clutch, with, you know, him seemingly controlling the media in a way that Jordan wasn't allowed to. I don't know if they fit into the greatest of all time conversation, but if we're comparing their legacies, we at least need to throw that stuff out there.
I think all of this stuff, like, to me, I'm more of a, I don't want to count all that stuff when we're really having a debate at greatest of all time, but it does sort of feed into the narrative. It feeds into your perception and ultimately your opinion on who these guys are. And I think you just sort of got, when it comes to this stuff, it is so hard to give more credit to LeBron than Michael Jordan, because like you said, Michael Jordan kind of laid a certain foundation or whatever, like kind of built on a foundation. LeBron builds off of that. And that's just how these things go. I do think, and look, I'm not old enough to really understand like the political landscape of the country back then, but it was always bothersome that Michael Jordan just like never stood up for like anything.
Republicans like, buy shoes too, Wes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and like LeBron, but then again, like, could LeBron have done that back then? Right. Or was he building off
the China thing? He kind of did with the China.
Oh no. He hit in a bush during the entire thing. Cause he was, again, Chinese people buy shoes, and it was just like he couldn't he couldn't say something. It was the same exact thing. I don't know. I when it comes to that kind of stuff and what they did, LeBron grew the business of basketball. The player empowerment thing is so important to how the league works these days. The, you know what, Michael Jordan stayed on one team, but he didn't really, but he stayed on one team his whole career, but again, he didn't. But LeBron was like, I'm just going to keep moving around because that's how I want to do it. It's just like, I don't need to be, you know, I don't need to be loyal to the laundry, so to speak. Yep. So I do think that he's just built on that. And I think both of them get credit. To me, it doesn't differentiate them. It puts them in the same sort of category because there are so many players who don't do that sort of thing. Right.
Yeah.
So
but that's just matter. That's indicative of the times, too. Right. I mean, what was interesting was when the Bulls lost to the Pistons, their response was, we need to go back and lift more weights and be stronger. When the Pistons lost, they did the same thing. They're like, OK, we need to figure out the Jordan rules. And there is that rivalry. These days, it's if you lose, it's who can we go pick up from a different team that can make us better? And, you know, there's arguments for both sides as to what's an okay approach, but it's just a different way. So when you're saying like, who's the better teammate, you know, does the off the court stuff matter? I agree. It's subjective and it's hard to quantify and actually, you know, give a good answer. I think it definitely counts and it should be weighed, but the eras are so different that I don't think it's really fair to either player to kind of make an absolute value on either of those things, because you can't, they're just so different. Their approach was so different. If you would have said, okay, Kyrie, LeBron, and Kevin Love, you guys all have to stay here and try it again. And you can't change anybody. And same with the Warriors. You can't get KD. You have to do this with your same squad. It's just not the way it was approached.
I don't remember at any point saying that we were going to be fair when we made this argument. Don't you worry about whether or not it's an even playing field. We just need to argue this crap out. And I tell you what, we got six more episodes to allow this argument to really work itself out. So I'll end it with this question to you, Maxime. Are you a little bit disappointed, if not a little surprised, that at some point during this, Wes didn't say, hey, I got to go to the bathroom. Why don't you guys just keep talking this out?
Yeah, I want to get his real behind the scenes takes.
Use that to push us into our next segment. So this is still The Last Dance, boys, but I'm going to put a pause on MJ v. LBJ. And now we're going to go to another probably poorly titled segment. We'll find out when Wes hears it and immediately comes up with a better one. I'm calling this Rabbit Holes. And what it is unanswerable questions we still have to ask. Here is my first one for you guys. Who so far has worn the most ridiculous hat? Is it Jordan in his beret, Phil Jackson in his large Indiana Jones hat, or Rodman in his Renaissance painter's hat? For me, it's Rodman.
But that's almost like unfair. Like, obviously it's Rodman.
Yeah. And it's the way in which he wears it, too. It gives him
rank
an edge.
Rank them for me, Wes. 1, 2, and 3. Most ridiculous to least ridiculous.
You know what? Screw it. Michael Jordan has the most ridiculous hat. LeBron would have never worn that hat.
You bastard. You're just being spiteful now. I'll have I'm wearing a beret right now as an
idiot. It was ridiculous because he was wearing it so seriously. Where Rodman was always in on the joke, you know, like he knew exactly what he was doing. He knew he was in on the bit, right? Michael Jordan, like, didn't know we were laughing at his beret. So Michael Jordan, most ridiculous, followed by whoever the other person was, Ben Rodman.
Phil Jackson. There's a throwaway line. Oh, no,
Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson is the least ridiculous because that was totally within his character.
There's a throwaway line, although we didn't actually get to see the hat, but I think it's Krause. And he's talking about the first time that Phil Jackson was interviewed for the job and he didn't get it. And he mentions, I believe, that he was wearing a hat with a parrot feather in it. And the idea that someone would come to an interview, any interview, with like, not only am I going to be wearing a hat through that interview, I'm going to need a bird's feather. In fact, a parrot feather was so interesting to me, but we didn't get to see it. So my 1, 2, 3, most ridiculous by far, whether or not he was in on the joke or not, Rodman's Renaissance hat, followed closely by Jordan's beret, and then Phil Jackson's parrot hat. Marcus, what's your order?
I think it's Jordan beret number one. And it's because he had his name inscribed on it, I think is what they said in there. Yeah. So that little bit, I mean, I think just in general, you know, Michael Jordan to me is still the GOAT on the court. But I think where he is definitely not the GOAT is his fashion sense. So I think just the beret alone and having your name, like to Wes's point, he took it so seriously. Like he was like, oh, and this is my beret in case everybody else gets one and you need to know whose one I need to put on my head. So I would go Michael and then Dennis and then Phil Jackson.
Maxime, how much money would I have to pay you? Real question. How much money would I have to pay you to wear a beret with your name on it completely seriously for a work week? You couldn't tell anybody, like you had to present like, nope, this is my new look now, down to the fact that it has my name on it. I don't know what you say about berets, wherever the hell that name was. How much would it take?
Oof, well, you're catching me at an interesting time in this reduced economy and the shelter in place. So this might be biased to that end. I don't know, 100, 200 bucks, something like that.
Wes, would I have you in a beret for a week for 200 bucks?
Yeah, for sure. Done.
To me, it's interesting that you framed the argument, Wes, in terms of like what's in line with their character, because like that doesn't change anything for me. I find it, the whole Phil Jackson Native American thing, and I know they sort of described it as like he grew up in this place around Native American communities. It's fucking weird, man.
It's like, hell of annoying.
It's so weird.
when they started going through the various things that were in the team room, and he's mentioning it, just like, of course that's in there. You know, I had like a bone from the neck of a buffalo. You know, it's like, what are you talking about, Stu? Like, why is that in there? But the interesting part about success, man, and it's true for money too. If you have a ton of money or you have a ton of success, you can be as strange as you want, and they don't call it strange. They call it eccentric, you know? So he can do all that crazy stuff, and people are just like, oh, he's super eccentric. Well, really, it's just strange as hell. But let me give you a little bit more of a serious question. So these are different eras, right? And one of the things that you talked about that kind of sparked this for me, Wes, was the difference in how possibly LeBron is demonstrating his own competitive spirit than the way that Jordan did. And it's possible, just possible, that LeBron recognizes that in an era of social media where everything is told immediately, it wouldn't be consumed the same way. So which leads me to this question. If Jordan was a dick now, you know, this same level of you, I'll punch my grandmother if it means winning the finals. And we got to hear about it immediately, right? When he trashed Kwame Brown and basically destroyed his career, supposedly. We heard about it right then. Or when he refused to hug his teammate, jokingly after the McDonald's championship in Paris. Would it be received the same way now, you know, or would he be vilified for it?
I think we're seeing a little bit of that. It's not to the same degree just because he is not as dominant, but Chris Paul has kind of gotten that other end of the stick throughout his career. I mean, he was basically like, James Harden told management, trade this guy. He's an asshole. I don't want him around anymore. But then again, James Harden was the best player on that team. If it were the other way around, Chris Paul might have had James Harden traded. I don't know. I think it's less of just like the social media and the 24/7 news cycle part of it. I really just think it's a generational thing. Like I was talking to Andy Thompson about this for an article I wrote. Shout out to articles that I write. But he was talking, I asked him that question. I was like, is that like, were you uncomfortable now showing this film 22 years later, understanding like what it was back then to you? And he's like, I grew up in the era where coaches just yelled at kids. It was just normal. Like, yeah, you played sports, you got yelled at, period. It was normal for all these guys. But that's just not the way a lot of these NBA players even now grew up. They didn't get yelled at. It was a different generational thing. So if Michael Jordan came in from like back in time 30 years ago and just started like flamethrowering everybody, yeah, we'd be like, who the hell? Like, Bob Knight was revered. He was in movies. He was like the greatest basketball coach of all time. He was coaching the Olympics. Like, he was like revered. And now we all hate him because he's a jackass. Like, it's just, it's a generational thing. And that, I think that's mostly what it would be.
You boys agree?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's like this question of on court versus off court. You know, I liken it a lot to like Miles Davis is a complete jackass. He famously punched band members down a set of stairs after they quit the band. But like, he's still the greatest trumpet player. You know, it's just like, who cares how you get the results so long as you get the results.
Suddenly, I really want a Miles Davis documentary in my life. I would immediately be all over that.
I think that my take on that is, I think that is a notch in the LeBron category, because I think he's handled that like astonishingly well. Like, for all the players, and you know, for all the access that we have to players' personal lives, like, there really hasn't been a huge LeBron scandal. You know, and I think there, for him to have navigated that and not had those moments isn't a bad thing. It doesn't mean he's less competitive to the point to where he shouldn't be considered the GOAT. I mean, I think it's amazing that we're having this discussion, because there's actually a debate that you can have about it. So I think that's a huge thing for LeBron. But I just think the way that the media works today, I think Michael Jordan would have had a harder time with it. I think there would have been some more, he would have been vilified a little bit more on a few things because of his personality versus the way LeBron handles it.
Well, and if we put these two topics together the way you just did, MT, and I like it, the one thing that I will immediately side with Wes on is that LeBron is a more polished media presenter. There's no question about it at all. And we've even seen Jordan within the course of the documentary grow up on that side. We see him, you know, in 84 as a rookie, kind of bashful, not knowing what he wants to do. And then we see some of the most polished takes that I've ever seen from an athlete. He loses in two straight game sevens and gives these really calm explanations, you know, to a camera. But he wasn't like that when he first got in. LeBron, from the moment he was, what, 16, 17, has been in the crucible of the media. You know, ESPN was broadcasting his games immediately. So even as a rookie, he had a polish to him when it came to dealing with reporters that Jordan didn't have, you know, and that probably is more of a byproduct of era. But let me ask you this. So we've been a little tongue in cheek, and this one's a little bit more serious. So, you know, put your thinking hats on, boys. But in your opinion, I'll throw it to you first, Wes. Who has a deeper voice, Scottie Pippen or Darth Vader?
Wow, what a season, you know, playing against the Knicks, and it was a lot of fun, to be honest with you.
No, I am your father.
Oh my God. So Darth Vader's wearing a mask, right?
Fair. Yeah, okay.
So if you were to put that
like
mask
this. Yeah.
On Scottie Pippen. Okay. Look, if you ask me a serious question like this, I'm gonna answer it seriously.
Yeah.
If you give Scottie Pippen the mask, he may have a deeper voice. He is not nearly as menacing, but he may have a deeper voice. Was that not the saddest scene, by the way, in the entire documentary so far? That behind the scenes footage, going in the hotel room and just asking him, "Hey, so you were making like a big fuss of never playing again, and now it sounds like you are. What's the deal?" And he's "Oh, they threatened my paycheck."
Yeah,
like, that was the saddest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the flip of Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, you know, like when they first come to him and they're asking him about the contract that Pippen signed, and he's like, "Yeah, man, I told him then, you know, this is too many years. Like, this is not good for you. You shouldn't do it." And then there's like 3 seconds, 4 seconds, 5 seconds. And they ask him, "Well, what if he'd wanted to renegotiate?" He's like, "Oh, hell no." He's like, "No, absolutely not, dude. That's what they agreed to. So that's what's going to happen."
And it makes Scottie Pippen's appearances on The Jump even more sad, because now you know why he's doing it. And it kind of seems like a favor that ESPN is doing for him and maybe for Michael Jordan in order to like get the rights to run this thing. I don't even know, because
you're making me hell upset now. You're making me
Scottie
sad.
Pippen is legitimately not good. He has not had a single good point ever on The Jump. And it's like, why do they continue to bring him out here? Okay.
You know what they need to do on The Jump? They need to give him Darth Vader's helmet and just let him solidify the deepest voice title. Just give him that win, man. You know what I mean? It's just why do we keep leaving this argument on the fence? We should have an answer to it immediately. Let me give you a more serious one. So the last couple, we've been looking at the rivalry between Detroit and the Bulls, and it is drama. It's fantastic. They hated each other. You know, I mean, one of the scenes I particularly liked is first we get Isaiah's explanation for why they left the floor. And then we have this scene where they try to hand that explanation to Jordan. And before he even watches, he's like, oh, that's bullshit. Whatever he says is a filthy lie. So my question to you guys is, in this era where the stars grow up playing with one another, AAU, they know each other for years and years and years, will we ever see a heated rivalry like Bulls Pistons?
No way, especially in the era of player movement like this. I mean, even just the, you know, Rodman switching onto the Bulls, I think, is enough of a case study of why that shouldn't happen, because you never know when the guy that you're supposed to be hating ends up as your teammate.
Yeah, which really struck out to me. That was almost like Rodman joining the Bulls after what we saw would be like Harden joining the Warriors. You know, like they hated each other, man. And he seemingly was able to come in without any real drama. MT West, do you guys agree? No, is the era of contest between teams done?
I think so. I mean, I don't think it'll ever get to the level of the Bulls Pistons. I think it'll get close. Like the Warriors and Cavs didn't like each other. Warriors and Thunder didn't like each other, for example. But I think what prevents it, AAU has a thing in it, but I think what really prevents it is Team USA. Because I think they all get to know each other and play with each other in FIBA and in the Olympics, and they're all the superstars, and they bond, you know, like they get to know each other. One of the reasons why KD and Draymond were close friends was because of the Olympic team. So I think that camaraderie that is built over that time is going to prevent them from being heated rivalries. And it's one of the reasons why Isaiah and Michael still hate each other, is because Michael is like, you're not putting them on Isaiah on the dream team.
Yeah, I think that's a good point you make there. And it's even like, you just take that further. I mean, the way that shoe deals work now and shoe companies work, I mean, everybody that, you know, wears Nike knows each other. Everybody that wears Adidas knows each other. They go to these like events during All-Star weekend, like all the time. I mean, like players who have never played together, AAU, like grew up on opposite sides of the country, like just never, like are best friends because they got to know each other through this Nike event, you know, in Las Vegas or whatever. I don't think we'll ever, I think we'll get close, but it's never going to be like the sustained thing like Detroit and Chicago was. I mean, I think the closest, honestly, that we've gotten to it is Houston versus Golden State, because Houston kind of did it that way. They kept switching out a lot of players, but the key players were still there. And they literally built their team to beat the Warriors. And that's what resonated with me, is when they were talking about Chicago sort of rebuilding. Like, yeah, they got into the weight room, but they made, you know, their roster moves and also in order to beat Detroit. We'll still get some of that, but I don't know that we'll get that necessary. Like, I don't think we'll get that vitriol in between specific personalities the way that, like, we won't get that anymore the way we got it back then. Also, too, because there is a little bit now an us against them thing with professional athletes and the media, to kind of go back to that. It kind of all comes back, because back then the media wasn't what it was, right? It wasn't 24/7 sports coverage wall to wall. Like ESPN wasn't what it was back then. Like you even go back to like Bill Russell's era, where he just like hated almost every opponent that he played against, because it's like, who else are you going to hate? The whole us against them was us being the Celtics, them, all the other NBA players.
Yeah.
Now it's sort of evolved from us NBA players / just professional athletes in general, them, just like the collective public who don't really know. Like we see more like Russell Westbrook fighting with fans than we do other players at this point. So I do think that us against them thing has sort of evolved into that.
I think you guys are right, and it makes me kind of sad to say that because nothing elevates a playoff game like genuine dislike. You know, it's just the stuff that good entertainment is made of. When Rodman takes the longer than 48 hours detour during the middle of a championship season and is in Vegas, we get some footage where he's taking kamikaze shots. I don't remember what the hell's in a kamikaze. I think it's a bunch of different types of alcohol, but he has like some specific cheers to it, right? And then at the end of that scene, and now Rodman is back at Bulls practice, there's a quick like 2 or 3 second interlude where it looks like a cameraman is filming Rodman at a Bulls practice, and he's got one of those iconic Gatorade cups in his hand, so you can't see through it. You know, it's a green cardboard cup that says Gatorade. And Rodman doesn't say anything, and then he looks into the camera and he says, "This is a kamikaze," talking about the drink he is apparently drinking at practice. Do you guys think he had a kamikaze in that glass? Because I'm going to say yes. I can tell you hair of the dog is a real thing. If you have a hangover and you drink a little alcohol the next day, it helps you get through the hangover. You are having withdrawals and your body needs a little bit of the reminder. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he needed a little taste to get through that morning practice. And it also wouldn't surprise me, given what we've seen from the Bulls organization then, that they allowed it. You're like, F it, whatever, dude. He'll give us 19 rebounds tonight. Let him drink whatever the hell he wants. What do you guys think?
Absolutely. 100%. It was kamikaze in that cup. I mean, this dude, they showed that stat. He got 20 rebounds and 0 points in 7 games throughout his career. 7 times he got 20 rebounds and 0 points. That's just bananas. Like, the next closest person is Marcus Camby with 2. Like, it's just a crazy, crazy stat. But I mean, Dennis Rodman started load management, basically. Yep. I mean, he took off 48 hours. It's like, you know, like, I need a break. And, you know, Phil Jackson, to his credit, like they said in the documentary, and Steve Kerr talked about it, like, he was the ultimate at understanding his players and, you know, like, making sure that he coached in a way that treated every individual player as their own person and what would be best to bring out the best in them. So
kamikazes.
Kamikazes at practice.
I agree with both of you. I'm going to use science to back up our argument here. Yes. A kamikaze is vodka, triple sec, and lime juice. The most common Gatorade flavor, among the top 2 most common Gatorade flavors among sports in sports area, is green, whatever flavor, lemon lime. And so you already have one of the 3 ingredients in that cup. All you had to do, we don't think that Dennis Rodman carries a bottle of vodka with him all the time. Of course he does. So all he needed to do was find some triple sec. I'm sure he was prepared. Okay. Yeah, it was a done deal.
Slam dunk. Let me give you a harder question. It's a 2-parter. Part 1, in your mind, is there any way that Jordan actually went into a Vegas hotel room and pulled Mitt Rodman out of the bed? And 2, if the answer to that is yes, who is lying? Jordan or Carmen Electra? Because Jordan says, I pulled him out of the bed and I don't even want to talk about what was in the bed. What's happening there? We just pulled him out. Carmen Electra says, yeah, he came in, but I hid. You know, I hid in the closet. She gives some response about how she wasn't in the bed. So what's going on there? Bring me to the bottom of that.
No, she said I hid under the covers.
But Carmen, well, she said this.
There's a knock on the door. It's Michael Jordan. And I hid. I didn't want him to see me like that. So I, like, I'm just like hiding behind the couch with covers over me. Come on, we gotta get to practice.
She was in the bed.
No, she said behind the couch.
Yeah, behind the couch. Yeah, exactly right. She took herself out of that scenario. So I mean, maybe Jordan saw somebody else in there. But take them one at a time. Did Jordan go in there? And what the hell did he see?
Yes, he went in there. Yes, Carmen Electra was in there. Yes, Carmen Electra hid behind a couch. Yes, there was something else that Carmen Electra and Dennis Rodman were sharing that was still in that bed that Michael Jordan saw.
Would you like to venture a guess as to what that third item was, or leave it up to our imagination?
A little bit harder than kamikazes, I would imagine.
Fair enough. And T, Maxine, you guys want to touch this with a 20-foot pole or just let it slide out?
Yes, Jordan absolutely went there. He doesn't seem like somebody who would lie about that kind of situation. And he wanted him back. He was like, if you're gonna, anybody takes a break, it's me. Yes, Carmen Electra was in there. I guess she wasn't under the sheets, so she's behind the couch. And I think what was in the bed was at least 2 other people.
Yeah, so that all adds up. I'm going to go right down the chain. So rather than repeat everything that was just said, I'm just going to ask, Joe Exotic and Doc Antle, were they bringing Tigers to Vegas in the 90s?
100%. 100%. I bet you, I mean, this is far enough back where they probably had a relationship with Carol Baskin's husband before he was fed off to one of those Tigers. You know, yeah, I mean, RIP, that's exactly right. And Shannon. Also, yeah. I understand he was a member of the Marriott Hotel Group. So we should put that on the record. Let me give you guys this final question. And Wes, it's aimed at you directly. And so another segment that we will explore during these Last Dance conversations is how eras have changed. And I'm not going to jump into it too much right now. But one of the things that stuck out was the story we heard about Chicago's cocaine traveling circus, right? And the kind, you know, Jordan says that during his rookie year, he knocks on a door. Somebody looks through it. Hears teammates say, "Oh, it's just Jordan." They open it up, and in there is a cornucopia of fun, depending on how you use that word. So there's girls over here. There's cocaine here. There's other stuff over here. Everything was in a single room, and the entire team seemed to be partaking in it. And that room was in the team hotel. Wes, you travel with these boys. Could anything like that happen now? I'm not talking about the Warriors. You know, you don't have to bring out anybody specific, but just like this era, could in an era where everyone has a cell phone. I mean, not just the players, but everyone in the hotel. Everything. Is there any way parties like that can still happen?
Yeah.
Fuck yes. That makes me so totally happy.
I mean, it's just, it would happen differently than how it happened before. I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know how they acquired all of those things in order. I would imagine it wasn't that hard. I imagine you go to a nightclub and they see who you are and they figure it out for you, right? Now it's a little bit less, like, it's all based on your cell phone. That's why you can do it. You have technology. I mean, you have, like, Postmates. I'm sure you can just, like, Postmates strippers and cocaine. Like, why not? Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA. But I do think that with all of the everything at your information and at your disposal now, like, 100%. And plus, like I said before, these guys are so media savvy at this point that they're not going to, like, you're not going to have some, like, asshole walking in filming it. I mean, you might have, like, a D'Angelo Russell situation early on, but, like, you don't invite the rookies, right? Like, you're not going to have it to the point where it's all of them and Michael Jordan walks in. It's going to be maybe, like, three or four of the guys who really know what's up. And then they, you know, get what they need and they have a nice night. I mean, look, you can tell when players are, like, hungover and stuff. You have, like, the Miami flu for a reason. Like, stuff still happens. So why wouldn't it go to an extreme? All these guys only live in extremes.
And it's why they leave. You have to leave your cell phone in a bag or on the table in some parties.
That makes sense. Dave Chappelle style. Yeah,
exactly. That makes sense. Also, Wes, let me tell you how remarkably jealous I am of the apparent sponsors the Locked On podcast has. My God, man. I mean, you know, like, oh, we had, like, the one where you shave your balls. You've got ones that can bring you Postmates cocaine. There's, like, so I need to get on that.
$100 in free delivery credit in your first 7 days.
My God. I mean, I need to get on that. That's just all there is to it. Boys, Maxine and Marcus, we are not pulling our weight. And I mean that in a few different ways. Okay, huge fun, you guys. In fact, so much fun. I left a bunch of content on the table here. I got another couple of pages, but there's no way we can force people to listen to longer than a 90-minute podcast. So we'll put a quick pause on it here and then rejoin this conversation maybe a little bit later in the week. Wes, damn, man, awesome. Awesome appearance. I love your fire. I always do, and I'm even more positive I'm not alone. Those out there who need more Goldberg in their life, where should they turn?
Go to Twitter at WC Goldberg and hit up that Postmates code, guys.
I hate pimping other people's podcasts, but I've got to say this, man. I've got to say it. You have an amazing guest coming up next week on Locked On. Who is it? When can we hear the episode?
Oh, yeah. I had Jason Richardson on this week, actually. I posted it early. I think it's going to be really relevant for Warriors fans. It's only like 18 minutes long. It's literally just my conversation with him over the phone. But in the third segment, he tells a story that you're going to want to hear. That's all.
Badass.
Locked on Warriors.
Get out there and check it out. You know where that'll find us. Twitter @WarriorsHuddle, our email account, warriorshuddle@gmail.com. We have a Patreon account, but for right now, we've actually suspended it. You know how much we appreciate your guys' generosity, your support with both your time and your money. Right now, with the pandemic and everything so weird economically, we've turned off those donations because it just doesn't seem right. But thank you, thank you, thank you. And we'll let you guys know, hopefully, when the economy opens back up, when we will be accepting that generosity again. With that in mind, go Warriors. And hopefully, we'll see you later this week.
Good.